Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. You'll be able to watch this broadcast later tonight on Facebook. And while I'm back in the city, I will be recording it live. We're going to share the latest on health and healing, as we always do. Then we're going to look at some issues that are important, from the environment to what the president and the Congress is not doing that they should, that we have a right to have done on our behalf, such as our infrastructure. But I'm going to be very detailed. What specifically should we be repairing or rebuilding or beginning from scratch, and why? Then I'm going to play some audio clips. Among those audio clips will be the latest from a group of scientists on why your smartphone is dangerous. And by the way, the people you're going to hear, this woman in particular, they're all very pro smartphones. And this was at a conference they were having. So I managed to find this clip, and I'm thinking, wow, if the mainstream media played this clip and interviewed this woman, smartphones would be challenged for their health, possibly even banned. But we're going to play it for you. Then I'm going to do a segment on education, as we have a lot of school teachers, principals, school administrators listening to this program on a daily basis. And I've been an instructor for a long time. All of us agree to one thing, that the quality of education today in many of our schools is substandard. How we're teaching, the quality of the curriculum, and the standards that we have in place are not providing for a whole generation of critical thinkers. They're learning to take the test, but not to learn the contents. So we're going to play a clip on that. And also today, one of the finest minds in our society is Chris Hedges. Chris did two pieces. They're both short. I'll play one today. It's about 5 minutes long, called The Great Depression and Is the Best Case for What? He'll explain, but it'll impact all of us. And also today, I'm going to play part one and tomorrow part two of a person who I have not heard before, a professor from New York University, talking about Google, Amazon, Facebook, and Apple, and why they should be broken up. How dangerous are each of these to our well-being? Now, most people think, well, they're not dangerous. They're positive. No, they're not. Not when you hear the person who's done more research on why there are dangers and should be broken up. So you hear both parts. Now, I was going to begin a series today on the environment. Instead, I'm going to give it next Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. It'll take 3 days. The final report, which I'll post, is 63 pages long. And if I took a whole hour, it would be about 20, 21 pages I could get through. Why is this series important? Because look in California today. Look at the fires. They now have the worst fire in the state's history, and this is the newest fire. The previous one was just a few months ago in Napa and a little in Orange County, but most of it was northern part of the state. Now they have one that's actually worse, and it's destroying lots of buildings. It's not under containment at all. And then at the same time, you have a little school on an island, Madagascar, that the waters come in 300 meters. That's 900, almost 1,000 feet that has come in from where it was in such a short period of time and wiped the school away. So from 2 years ago till now, there was a school. Now there's no school. And that's just one little example. But we don't hear about that. There's also a well called the Wright Well, which is probably going to become extinct this year. And we don't think about that. We should. We're losing between 150 to 200 species every 24 hours. There are more places in the world becoming desert-taken environments. The most is in China. Thousands of villages, communities were taken back by the desert just 1 year. Half of all the rivers in China cannot even be used. They're so polluted for irrigation, let alone drinking water. So all around the world, we're having major environmental crisis, yet we're not coming up with any major solutions, especially the United States. So I'm going to give you the most comprehensive, in-depth understanding of the world we live in. And this has required almost 10 years of exhaustive scholarship and research. Over 5,000 scientific studies have been read, over 100 books on the environment, and interviews with dozens of climatologists. So the homework has been done for you. It'll all be presented. And tomorrow I'll be announcing the premiere of my newest film. It's finished. I have it out now to a select group of 100 individuals for their critiques, and it's going to have a limited opening next Thursday, not this Thursday, Thursday week. But I'll give the information on, don't call my office, you'll be calling the theater directly. It'll be a limited private showing. But then in January, I'm going to be doing a worldwide premiere over the internet. And it'll be a big to-do because it's a very important film. The hardest-hitting film I've ever done in my career, and I've done over 100 films. So I think you'll find it important. So that just gives you a little idea of what is coming at you. So let's begin. There's a nutrient, it's called taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. And the latest research from Scripps Research Institute says that it can help repair cells damaged by multiple sclerosis. That's very important. And we also know that other nutrients can also help that. In fact, our phone system is out this week, but when we get it back in, I'm having some people with multiple sclerosis, one who's completely reversed it. He's been MS-free for 10 years, and he was not able to walk when he started the protocol. It was a 16-month protocol he was on, and taurine was not a part of it. So if they have one nutrient that's able to help, imagine if they had all the other nutrients. So you'll hear from these people what they did and the impact it's making on their multiple sclerosis. One has no multiple sclerosis at all, and his two separate neurologists were baffled. How could you be in advanced stages on crutches with ramps being built in your home, and now you can run a marathon? How's that possible? Well, it is. It happened. You'll hear from the person next week and another person as well. So here's what they're saying. They're saying that new research suggests that using taurine, which is, by the way, a molecule naturally produced by human cells, could boost the effectiveness of current multiple sclerosis therapies. And they found that taurine helps spark a process called remyelinization, which is crucial to repairing the nerve cells damaged in multiple sclerosis. Quote from their study, remission of multiple sclerosis symptoms is dependent upon the progress of remyelinization. So using taurine in combination with an existing MS drug and a future remyelinization-inducing treatment may help patients by improving overall efficacy. Well, we didn't have any drug, but before the people were even discussing stem cell rejuvenation, massive amounts of nutrients were being juiced that now has been shown to stimulate stem cell rejuvenation, which means that any cells in your body, your brain, your eyes, your heart, your lungs, can be rejuvenated, be repaired. I'll discuss that next week when I have the people with multiple sclerosis and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's who have reversed their conditions on. And by the way, why don't you call every hospital in the world, every single one. Start with some of the most respected, Sloan Kettering and some of Harvard up there, their Boston Hospital, and asked these hospitals, how many patients can you bring forward with detailed medical records who, using only your therapy, what you gave them, have completely reversed and stayed reversed post 10 years? I'd like to see him provide one single patient. Just one. We have a lot. You'll hear it next week. Now, this is from Oxford University. And here's what it says. That the microbiome, that's the good bacteria in your body, cause the body to thrive when you have regular physical contact. Now, yesterday or last week, I told you about your microbiome, your good bacteria, thrive when you have exercise, and it does. Good bacteria, not bad bacteria. This is saying, quote, hugging helps the immune system, cures depression, reduces stress, and induces sleep. Gut bacteria also appears to thrive with regular physical contact. Suggests new stats that shows this huddling, they're calling it huddling, action leads to a synchronized microbiome. Beneficial bacteria in the gut are known to attack pathogens, manufacture vitamins, and even act as an anti-cancer agents. Recent research has strengthened the scientific understanding that the microbiomes that live in your gut may affect what goes on in your body. Quote from the study, when people with different gut microbiomes interact, they share their symbiotic bacteria through touch. That's important, and this is from Oxford University Department of Zoology. I might host a bacteria in my gut that is well-behaved and fits my symbiotic gut community, but might turn out to be an invasive pathogen in another person who is not accustomed to it. And the data published in the Journal of Animal Ecology have implications for human health as microbiomes refine immune deference. So, let me give you an example of this. This is what happens when you pet a pet, a dog, a cat. You give them a massage. Cats we tend not to pet, we massage. Dogs we can pet. But they love being cuddled, especially dogs love being cuddled. They love to jump up on your lap, and all that tactile touching makes enormous difference. By the way, other animals love it as well. I could be sitting, and was, and suddenly this head comes right over my shoulder, rests on my chest, and it's a Jenny, a female donkey. Now, she was raised from being a baby, and so she just thinks she's a human, and she just wants love. She'll go over to all the other animals and bonds with them and nurtures them. It's wonderful to see that. But the petting causes not only you to relax, but the animal. And what this is saying is also creating a difference in the animal's immune system. But it also does the same thing in a human immune system. So we're a society that does not hold hands enough, hug enough, kiss enough, and we should. We should have a lot more tactile sensation because it's helping our gut. It's synchronizing our gut. It's making enormous difference. This morning I was asked by my executive producer, who was supposed to have someone on today, and I said, not yet. It's a little too esoteric at this time, and I want to see if it works. And then if it does, it's about a meditation, or not a meditation, a healing, distance healing, that is done at a meditation center for people with burns if they call within 25 minutes of the burn. It doesn't, it only is with getting rid of the pain in a matter of minutes. And I said, fine, we will test it first. And he said, do you not believe in it? And I said, oh, I very much believe in energy exchange. And then I reported to him something he did not know. And this was published actually in the Journal of Psychotronic Research a long time ago. I wanted to see if what I had done in the laboratory could be duplicated with humans. It started off with a discussion I had with a Dr. Lawrence LeShan. If you're a baby boomer and you were into psychology, you would have heard of him. He, Rollo May, there were a number of Martin Shepard, there were a number of Dr. Lane Kahn, psychologists and psychotherapists, Alan Putterman, psychiatrists, who believed that through our communication, our touch, our sound, we could inspire an energy that was transferred to another human being. But it had never actually been proven. So to see if it worked or didn't, I took a group of ascites tumor mice. They only live about 22 days. And I invited people who claimed that they could heal to participate. And of the 50 people who signed up, six were actually able, repeatedly, six out of six times over a two-year period, to heal these mice. One was Dr. Dolores Krieger. She was the head of nursing at New York University. And there's a photograph of her doing her healing work. In fact, thank goodness, I took photographs at the time. There was Rabbi Abraham Wiseman from Brooklyn, Dr. Thomas Carruth of St. Luke, Dr. Morton Jacobs. There was also Catherine Coleman Oglewhirl. And from Great Britain, the head of the spiritual healing community, Harry Edwards. So we had three people who were doing absentee healing, meaning they weren't there in person, and the other three were doing, or four were actually doing contact healing. But anything can happen with one. So you try it a second, third, fourth, fifth, sixth time. So if you get the same results six out of six times, and you have different people monitoring the experiment, so it's not just you, then you have a legitimate basis for saying, we discovered something. Now, of course, then there's the subjectivity of what exactly did you discover. And what we discovered was that energy from a human was able to be transferred into, in this case, mice. And those mice then responded by having their cancers cured. And then it went on for another 2 years by cutting enzymes, and they were able to meditate, and the enzymes came back together. They had two rooms, lead-based rooms. They had never seen, didn't know anything about them, and they had the same identical sprouts, same light, same background of the sprouts, same soil. Everything was identical. In one room, they just grew. In another room, the people would come in and meditate over, and they grew 300% faster. Also, in one room, we had a ficus plant. And it was a double-blind study. No one, not the scientists who were observing, nor the participants, knew what their message was. And each one would take out of a box a message. They couldn't share it with anyone else. Like one said, go into the room with the ficus, and there's a little recorder. Play some music, soft, meditative music. Another one would be spray, you know, the plant, gently. Another would be to massage the leaves of the plant. Another would be to go in and hum or sing to the plant. But one was go in, yell at the plant, and shake it. Okay, they all did that. No one knew who did what. Then, 3 months later, everyone returned on the same day. As each person entered the room, we had hooked up wires that read on a computer that showed the response, much like a EKG response. And lo and behold, nothing happened except when one person entered the room, the meter went off the chart. I mean, literally, it was bouncing, bouncing, bouncing. And that was the person that had gone and yelled and shaken it. So the plant recognized each of the people and the energy that was shared. So after I'd done all these, it was then time to see would it work with a human. So I took a person at the suggestion of his sister, who was a nurse practitioner. His name was Michael. I won't reveal his last name. He had an injury from swimming when he was young, and it left him with a degeneration, irreversible degeneration of the lower spine. He was wearing a brace. He couldn't touch his toes. He couldn't tie his shoes. He couldn't bend over. And he was in excruciating pain. He was not a happy camper. He didn't want to do this. He thought it was all nonsense. I said, well, look, at the very least, you'll have a free weekend in England. So first I had to have confirmation. So I had five separate orthopedic surgeons all do an examination with x-rays, a whole nine yards, to make sure that he had this. So you have to start with a base where you have something absolute. Then we took him over. And I had a separate group of six scientists who went over with me, because three of them were interested and they were just curious whether or not there was any legitimacy to this. I hired a person, a cinematographer from the BBC, and Dr. Anne Woolley Hart, Dr. Christopher Woodward, and other mainstream, highly respected physicians we went to see. Now, they all believed in healing, prayer healing, and they were part of a spiritual group over there that believed in this. Far more open to this in Great Britain, I found, than the United States. And each one of these individuals did their best. And I remember Anne Woolley Hart spent hours with him to no benefit. And so we spent a whole week. And then I'm thinking, well, maybe it just doesn't work. Maybe there's a different reason it works for animals, but not humans. Or maybe it won't work on him. Maybe his condition's too far gone. Anyhow, we had one more night to go. We were going to come back on a Sunday. And we had one more place to visit, Harry Edwards, who was the leader of the entire spiritual healing movement of Great Britain. And the night before, Michael wanted to leave. He didn't want to go. He said, this is all nonsense. It's quackery. You know, I shouldn't allow myself to waste a week of my life coming over here. I said, well, look, we also every day took you out to see all the sites. You got to see all the museums and places you've never seen, Westminster Abbey, great place to visit. I said, so it hasn't been a waste. It's been unsuccessful, but it has been a waste. So anyhow, the next day it was pouring rain, so we drove out to this beautiful estate. It was like a Tudor estate, old, and in lush countryside, no homes around it. And we went in, and a woman showed us in and put us in this room. No one was in that room. And there was a window. Michael was looking out the window. And I didn't know when Harry Edwards came in, so I told her cinematographer, set up the camera so the moment that door over there opens, you're filming. Don't worry about miking the person up. Just film, because I don't know what to expect. So about a half hour goes by, and very quietly the door opens. This senior citizen comes in, walks over behind Michael. Michael doesn't even see it, and no one's really paying that much attention. Everybody's kind of sitting around talking, and I'm watching, and this man just takes his hand down about a foot away from Michael's back, turns around and walks back out of the room. And what happened was Michael's back began to, like, you could hear visible cracking, and his body was as if it were going into a seizure. And yet he had been looking out the window. He didn't know anyone come in. And that was it. And so I'm perplexed. So immediately I said, how do you feel? Michael says, I feel strange. Some sensation. I don't know what it is. Describe it. He said, well, I feel very light. I feel very energized, but I feel very light. Do you feel pain, the pain you had been with all week? He said, right now I don't. I said, take off your brace. He said, well, I don't want to do that. I just try it. So he took off his brace. I said, now, before you said you couldn't go down and touch your shoes, couldn't tie your shoes, just bend down it gently, slowly. I'll be on one side, and Rick will be on the other side, and we'll grab you if you start to fall. He goes right down. And over the next half hour, he's doing push-ups and sit-ups. He's doing all kinds of things. And I'm thinking, wow. So we go back to the United States, and he's like a different person. His energy just rose up. He became a great athlete, by the way. phenomenal runner. And he went back to see those same people. And guess what the diagnosis was? Nothing had changed. Nothing. The x-rays, the medical exam showed nothing had changed. I said, that's not possible. Something did change. Something had changed. Now, here's the takeaway message. This is what's important. This is why when you come to a retreat or you're in a health support group, here's something I've never shared with you. So Michael's confused now. He didn't know what to believe. Maybe it was just a placebo effect. I said, well, if it's a placebo effect, how would you have known that there was a placebo effect since you didn't see the person? He didn't touch you. And yet, look what you're able to do. But placebos don't last very long, sometimes just minutes, days at the most. So weeks have gone by. And I asked the guy to send me the footage, which he did. And I'm watching that footage over and over again. And I couldn't see anything in it that would make me understand it. And then I slowed it down till I was watching it very slow, in ultra slow motion. And then because he wasn't mic'd, I didn't have a separate audio track, but not realizing the camera had a built-in mic. I didn't know that. So I heard the sound. It was very low, but I potted it up and we enhanced it. And what he said was this. He said, Harry said, but not to the room, just kind of said, and now the spiritual energy is reconnected. Meaning he worked on the spiritual energy, not the physical body. Wow. That then explains so much about the power of what happens when we share energy. We keep looking at the physical body, the physical manifestation. We're not realizing that everything that is physical is controlled by that which is ethereal. For example, what is the only thing missing when you're dead? Not your eyes, your heart, not your immune system. Everything is intact. It's your energy. And what is the conception of life? Energy. And can you conceive life without energy? You cannot. Have we ever created energy? We have not. Not once. Not Enrico Fermi splitting the atom. Not an electrical plant. Not a solar plant. No. You have to have a source. You have to have a progenitor source in order to manipulate energy. Oh, yeah, with turbines you can and water, you can create hydroelectric energy. With a solar panel and cells, you can create solar energy. With nuclear fissionable material, you can create nuclear energy. You can take a cell and you can manipulate it and you can change it, but no human being has ever created in history of the world, ever, nor do I believe could they ever. Life force. All we can do is utilize what we are given. But you have to have something to start. And that's where the codes are. And that's where the frequencies are. That's where the synchronizing and harmonizing the vibrations of the codes are what matter. So if we're living in trauma and depression and anxiety and disease and uncertainty and insecurity, all the psychotherapy and all the counseling of the world will not make a difference if we're not harmonizing with our authentic spiritual self. And hence at all my lectures, I don't care where it's at, in that jam-packed lecture I did before I left on the hurricane day, I said, we get caught up in the minutiae of the latest fads. And whatever the fad is, we call it the answer. And it's not. Or whole fads like the paleo diet's the fad, or lysosomal vitamin C is the fad, the cure, or macrobiotics is the cure, or raw food is the cure, or Scientology is the cure. Well, none of them are. What we have is we have a piece of the puzzle to which we apply it. but what about all the other pieces? And exactly what are you applying these pieces to? If you built a perfect car with every piece handcrafted, but you had no engine, your car's not going to run. So we never question the foundation to which everything is applied. And that is one of the reasons that we remain sick, irrespective of the therapies or the environment we're in. I see it when you have people who are disconnected from the spiritual energy, meaning their physical and conditional self, the epigenetic conditioned self, is not in harmony with their spiritual self. So they'll go to a retreat and gossip. They have the malingering energy, but not the healing energy, because they have not allowed themselves to harmonize. And to harmonize requires discipline. It requires some focus, or it requires a lot of power from another person who has that, like Harry Edwards. And there are people in this world who have the capacity with their own energy that is so finely tuned that they can break through that. Now, maybe, and I don't know, maybe this person who is claiming they can help people who are fire victims with their pain, maybe that's legitimate. Maybe it's not. I'll find out. I'm not going to expose people to it until I actually have it tested. But all healing must be combining the two energies. And then you can transform your disease into wellness. Just something to think about. And that's what I believe they were talking about with the biomes. And hugging can do that, because when we're hugging, we're being vulnerable. And only through vulnerability can we change. You can't change if you're rigid. Why do you think ultra-Orthodox people never change anything, no matter, even if it could save their life? Because their rigidity are walls and barriers that protect them from what is outside and protects what's outside from getting in. So you can't have a conversation with an Orthodox person in any orthodoxy. And who are the most Orthodox people? True believers and the most successful. They're fearful that the success of their belief system, be it a religious belief or political ideology, is so profoundly unique that it establishes them as the piece to their life, meaning their belief is their life. Everything else is subservient. So reason, common sense, challenge is subservient. But there are people who are between the two, and these are the emotionally high-maintenance people. You get their game after a while. In fact, I was just talking with Luann about if that particular person wants to come to another retreat, it really say no, because it's not for them. They play an emotional game. They're into everything supposedly that's really good, and yet they never transform themselves. They're just real high-maintenance emotional people lurching from one crisis, one drama to another, pretending that once they get through this, they're going to change. They never change, ever. That's their game. They're looking for people to rescue them. And how many times in your life have you taken that bait and wasted your time and energy trying to help someone who at the end, it wasn't what they were about? Their agenda was different. How many times I've seen people who say, oh, I need help. Then you see they don't follow protocol. Fortunately, there are people who do. And in life, what counts is those who show up to change, not those who resist it, defend it, or fight it. Or in many cases, resent it. Do you ever realize how many people resent your happiness, resent your success, resent your creativity, resent your joy, resent your lightness of being? They resent that. They can't stand that, because now you're not harmonizing with them. They'll look for someone to harmonize with. And it's not going to be anyone who would ask them to change. That's the latest on health and healing. We are 35 minutes into our program. I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting, video streaming. You can see this video tonight on YouTube, on Facebook. Now we're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to go right from the break into the right kind of education. And since our phones are out this week, we're going to have you email in any of your thoughts about what you believe would be a way of correcting and improving, in effect saving, our educational system. Because the one we have now, the majority of it does not work. And it's not helping infuse the right type of intellectual challenges that young people need. And if my generation, the baby boomers, if we and our parents' generation, if we grew up with this, we'd be functional illiterates. We would have achieved nothing up to this point. So here's the email address. I just want to make sure it's correct. It's prnstudio@gmail.com. prnstudio@gmail.com. And to the hackers who got through and disabled our phone system, okay, that you took care of. And interesting enough, it was on a day when I was going to do a special on Hillary Clinton, and so couldn't do that. But we have six extremely talented people on the internet that we brought together, and that's why we don't have all the crashes and disruptions that we historically have had. And by the way, just so you understand, I've only had 8 crashes. Every one of those crashes occurred on the day and minutes before I was to do a special on the Clintons. Now, that just may be a coincidence. And then we were taken off the air once, and we found out that we're at a different location now, but the location that we were at, there was an empty space sharing the same floor, and we found out that the wires to our studio had been cut. No one else's in the buildings were cut. Ours were. Again, it could have been a coincidence. Maybe they just cut themselves. Some phantom scissors. So much for that. Back in a moment. Please stay with us.
Right education can make the most out of life. It is often said that generals prepare for the last war. Well, we do the same thing with education. What worked before, chances are, will not work in the future. Baby boomers saw that a college education was important to success, and they're in the process of sending the next generation to college en masse. They fail to see that the cost-benefit ratio has changed significantly. You're better off giving your kids money to be debt-free and maybe to buy a house than you are to send them off to college. Also, that the jobs that were profitable are now oversaturated or dying with the world old order. So this is an interesting thing. Like when the boomers went off to college, a college education was worth so much because only, say, 3% of the population had a college education. And by having a college education, since it was so rare and it was a higher level of education, it opened doors to more jobs when they came into the job market. The baby boomers saw this as their fellow baby boomers, those who had college educations, tended to get better jobs and promoted faster. So as they grew up, they wanted their children to have the same benefits and, you know, put them one step ahead of each other. Well, if everybody's thinking the same thing and everybody gets a college education and they, you know, there's, you know, everybody has a college education and the education's so watered down that, quite honestly, a kid graduating from college doesn't even have the same kind of educational skill levels as a typical high schooler graduating from high school back in the 50s did. These degrees mean nothing. Here I have this college, Boston College diploma. Parents probably spent $200,000 to send me to this school. And yet, you know, on the job market, there's other people who have the same college diploma and maybe have even more job skills, and there's no jobs for them. And when this paradigm shift happens, the education that was so important in the old order becomes worthless, because in the new order, those skills aren't going to be as highly cherished as the old one was. So instead of preparing for old skills like being an accountant or a lawyer, new skills like being a geologist, I think, would be kind of that next step ahead as the United States and the world starts needing more technical people, looking for more and more depleting resources. Energy, you know, high technology jobs will always be something to have. But instead of training your children for a job market that is either dying or is indefinitely tied to an old order, have your kids train for that next step. Try to picture what the world would look like when they need to come out into the job market, and what are going to be the growing fields there. Mentoring is a skilled person.
He has something else he wants to share here. It's about mentoring. So let's just summarize his thoughts. This is just an average person. I like to have just average people, not academics, not scholars in their field, but just regular people, see what they're thinking. So he's saying, hey, he went to Boston College, and it cost him a couple $100,000 to get his degree, but now there's all this competition, and he can't get a job in the field, and even the jobs that are out there are not able to pay enough to pay back the student loan, which means that his parents are now in debt $200,000. It would have been better, he believes, had they just given that money to buy a house. Well, I disagree. I don't believe that we should buy any house today. I believe that we're in a bubble. We are in a bubble. It's not a belief. It's a fact. And I believe our entire economy, or the economies, will be adversely affected over the next 2 years as these bubbles begin to burst, including the equity bubble on Wall Street, including the commercial real estate bubble. Just go up and down any street in the United States and see how many empty storefronts there are, because the average person wanting to open a small business cannot afford that rent and the taxes. And the landlords pass on all the taxes, 100%, to the tenant. And so that's going to cause a crash. Also, people are buying homes again on credit. They're buying cars again on credit. So you've got to stop confusing the gross domestic product of around $18.5 trillion with the amount of debt that we're holding. We're holding $200 trillion, more or less, based upon all the different debts, the corporate debt, the state debts, the city debts, and the individual debts, the mortgage debts, the credit card debts, the car loan debts. You take all these expenses plus the unfunded entitlements and underfunded entitlements, and there's where you get your $200 trillion, plus the government's own debt. And there's no way we can pay this. So in effect, we are bankrupt. As long as the world accepts treasury notes as legitimate currencies instead of the fraudulent fiat currencies they are, not backed up by anything, then you'll see why when Russia and China and other countries start using gold to back up their dollars, meaning their ruples or the yuan, they will end up being the reserve currency people want, because there's something backing it up. So this will take a couple of years to completely implode. But when it does, when the dollar is no longer the dominant reserve currency, watch how that impacts different economies, especially those that have borrowed dollars or used dollars for massive debt. And also, when you have all these people not being able to work, how are they supposed to go buy anything? And the good news about the millennial generation, it is the first generation in the last 100 years that have not valued material possessions over other issues of life. So they're not running out there to buy everything that historically everyone else has bought. They might buy all the latest gadgets and be using some very dangerous and intrusive gadgets, but they're not loading up with enormous amount of debt and possessions. The majority are not. So our whole economy is changing, And if you're not looking ahead, you're going to go into a traditional education and you're just going to waste that time. I don't care if it's public or private. Unless you know in advance what you want and you've done your homework and know there's going to be a job at a living wage when you get out and have an ability to pay off that debt. Because if you don't, with the compounding interest, a $30,000 student loan will end up being $75,000 by the time you take 25 years to pay it off. And I don't believe we have 25 years. I don't believe we have 15. I don't believe we have 10 years before we start seeing massive implosion of our life based upon the environment. Just imagine being in California today. And 2 weeks ago, you could have gone to sleep, looked out, looked at the environment, thought, this is beautiful. I moved in the right place at the right time. I'm living right where I should be living. And today, when they're looking out over all their landscaping burning and possibly their homes and thinking, wow, nobody was prepared for this, but they should have been. You're going to be prepared for the default in the American economies with cities going bankrupt. States can't go bankrupt. They start to default on some things, and the federal government cannot go bankrupt. But that doesn't mean that it's able to pay its bills. Do you think all the trillions of dollars China's given it, that they'll ever see that money? They might redeem some of it, $400 or $500 billion. No, we're the drunken louse on the block that just is blindly spending all on the wrong things. That's what he's saying. So he's saying, and I would say, don't buy a house. Pay for an education in trades that are realistic to providing you with a quality of life. Those trades and skills that people do need should be the future, not a traditional education. Now he's saying something that you never hear, mentoring, and what it means to have someone in your life that could mentor. I first came to New York, my first job in New York. Well, not my first. I was a short-order chef because I could cook, and that's how I lived for a couple months until I got a job at the United Nations Institute of International Education as a research analyst. But later, my primary job was as a ghostwriter, an editor at Writers Literary Agency under the great American feminist author who was in her 80th time, Sarah Donah. I wasn't paid. One day a week, she would work with me on my work. And in turn, I did this other. I was happy to do it. My friends thought I was foolish. What are you doing that for? You're being exploited. No, I'm learning from someone a lot smarter than me. I'm very naive. I'm no better than average and possibly below average in my intellect. So I believe it's worth spending some time learning. Well, that's just stupid. You're being naive. You're allowing someone to exploit you. Really? Well, that was 47 million books sold later. Those people could have gotten a lesson, but no, their arrogance wouldn't allow them to learn from other people. Wow. So I'm a big believer you can learn if you're willing and have the circumstances to mentor or be mentored. Here's what he has to say on this.
The mentor has a stake in the training of the apprentice since he will be sacrificing his time and be judged off the outcome of his apprenticeship. In this relationship, a person's character and work ethic is more important than their ability to memorize facts. This working together builds a sense of camaraderie, purpose, and grounded in reality. And when you are grounded and rewarded for direct value you put in, you tend to your assets better. So this program that I work with is a mentoring program to teach people how to do real estate. And this, to me, is the most effective way of training anybody any skill.
I'm a big believer that if every holistic doctor mentored other doctors, it would be enormous sea change in how medicine is treated. I mentored a doctor. He came to one of my lectures in the early 1970s. And afterwards, he came over, he said, I would like to learn about holistic philosophy. I'm not familiar with it, could I just come by your office? I said, sure. He said, when do you counsel people? I said, I counsel them generally in the evening. And so he was a very interested person. He came by, sat very quietly, took massive notes, sat it over in the corner of my office, and never said a word. When I was finished for the day, he'd say thanks and he'd leave. Sometimes it'd be 1 o'clock in the morning. He'd be there the whole time. And yet he had a full medical practice the next day. He was an Orthodox physician. After about a year and a half, and also attending a lot of lectures, every lecture I gave, and even some retreats, he would show up. And finally, he said, I think I've got it. I said, good. And he would still come to every lecture. He must have come that I did in New York, must have 400 or 500 lectures. And that was Dr. Martin Feldman. That's how he went from being an Orthodox, board-certified neurologist at Mount Sinai, a professor up there, and also publishing over 60 articles, to being one of the leading, most humanistic physicians, one of the most kind physicians, giving physicians America's ever had. So that's important. So we have to understand that we should go back, if we can. I think that there should be people in the poor neighborhoods who have skills, who can mentor others so they can help learn those skills and get out of that neighborhood. Remember, when I came from West Virginia, we didn't have any of this. So I was extremely naive. And I'm thankful that I had people who I could work with. It wasn't exploitation. It was learning what I didn't know. This is from Janet. And Janet says, how about using the Montessori method everywhere? The Montessori method is a child-centered educational approach that celebrates, nurtures each child's intrinsic desire to learn. From Janet P. King. Thank you, Janet. I would agree. In fact, I was approached once by Montessori to put together a really healthy meal program for the students. And I did. And then later, Gloria Swanson, I was talking about it on the radio, and she called me. This is the old, one of the founders of Hollywood, along with Charlie Chaplin and D.W. Griffith and Mary Pickford and Douglas Fairbanks Jr. And she was a wonderful human being, very little tiny woman. I mean, tiny, very petite, but such energy. Wow. She walked in a room and you knew she was there. And she said, you know, I'd like to do a healthy school program for schools up in Harlem. And she had the contacts and we put that together. So I have a lot of respect for the Montessori method of teaching. And I believe it would be a very good benefit to imply that we can change our system by looking at systems that work better than the one we're currently using, if everything is to teach to the test instead of teaching to allow critical thinking. So what we'll do this week, anytime I ask people for a question on a system, please email us. And the email address, again, is prnstudio@gmail.com. We're coming up at the end of the program in another minute here. Real quick, here are some of the infrastructures that the President and Congress should be working on. They have allocated money for over $1 trillion for a nuclear arsenal upgrade, which we do not need, and over $587 billion to a military-industrial complex that is not needed. And on these talk shows, traipsing up people to say how deplorable our military's condition is today are lies. In fact, I was going to present how an 80 cents bolt, a single bolt, and it showed, I have a picture of it. The Pentagon was being billed by one of the major military industrial contractors, $2,023 for that same bolt. I'm going to go over the excessive, absurd, obscene amounts of profiteering that the military-industrial complex has exploited. I'll give you the example of 10 different contracts, all identical for one job. Why do we need 10? The redundancy factor, because those are the people who played the system. Here are some of the systems we should have. Our entire electricity generation system is archaic. For transmitting and distributing electric, our grid is terrible. We should have grids built today, designed, which can be done, that immediately disconnect if there's a solar storm, so they don't get fried, or anything that could down the lines and cause electric to go out. We can design better systems today. That should be at the top of our list, and get rid of the fossil fuel-based. We should close up all of our nuclear reactors. These are dinosaurs. We should get rid of oil production, gas production that fuels our transportation distribution system, the defective pipelines, the leaks, including hydrofracking. The oil and oil product production is yesterday's story. We've got to upgrade our telecommunications, our water supply, our drinking water, the wastewater, sewage, the stemming from the surface water, the dikes and sluices. All these have to be upgraded. Bridges have to be upgraded. Our agriculture, food production, we have to get away from a mono culture, of a single crop culture that denatures the soil and pollutes the food. We need more like Rudolf Steiner biodynamic farming. We need to protect our water sources from chemical companies and fertilizers and pesticides. We should make them financially responsible. And if you're shown to have done something intentionally, automatically those people should be arrested. We should make it personal, not where they can pay a fine and be indifferent. We should also look at our roads and bridges and tunnels. They're very old. Our levees in New Orleans are not high enough. And our public health, our hospitals, our ambulances, horrible conditions in so many hospitals. And we should have single-payer public health hospital. Take the profit out of all health care. Give a good wage, absolutely. But take the profit out so we don't have a person who has hepatitis C having to pay $1,000 a pill per day for the next 90 days. Yes, the pill will cure you, but if you went to India, you get the same pill for under $1,000. And we're at $80,000, $90,000? That's absurd. But that's what happens when the pharmaceutical industry has enough money through its lobbying organizations to compromise our politicians. We should also deindustrialize the pollution that comes from the military-industrial complex. We should also completely revise our financial services industry so that there's no more of these mortgage collapse or collapse of Lehman Brothers and Bear Stearns. We should not ever again protect any of these banks from proper bankruptcy. And finally, we have to spend more time reforesting. And if we put 100 million trees in every state, that would do a great deal to reduce carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. Of course, if we went to something that the government can't do, but we as individuals can, a plant-based diet, and phase out of animal production, that would also save about 18 to 24% of methane gases going into the atmosphere, which is a major contributor to global warming and the fires that you see in California. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. I'm Gary Nall. Have a nice day.